Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com.
Steve, good to be with you guys. Hope everything's going well today.
Everything is going well. Thanks. Appreciate it very much. All right, so what were your primary takeaways from Saturday night in Columbus?
Okay, well, people don't like the phrase moral victory because, you know, it sounds bad. It's like, okay, you're okay with losing, and I don't think Penn State is ever okay with losing. But if you just throw away moral victory, if you just throw that phrase away, I think there were a lot of positives to come out of that game. And here's my number one takeaway. Steve, I felt a lot better about the Penn State football team after the Ohio State game than I did after the Illinois game. Because after the Illinois game, you're wondering, wow, if they can lose to Illinois, they can lose to anybody. Well, after the Ohio State game, I think Penn State came out, played a good football game against a fantastic team. I mean, Penn State couldn't run the ball at all and still was in the game, which is amazing, Steve, if you think about, you know, that imbalance. So I felt better about the Penn State football team. I, you know, you're kind of back on track thinking that they can still do some positive things here as long as Sean Clifford stays healthy. And here's another takeaway, Steve. See if you agree with this. I thought they played better from start to finish in that game than they did in the 2016 game that they actually won. I thought Ohio State handled the 2016 game really for the first three quarters before Penn State had a great fourth quarter. But I thought in this game, Penn State was right there, toe-to-toe, was with the better team for a good portion of the game.
I think the way I looked at it was I thought both teams played with a lot of guts. I thought both teams played with a lot of guts on Saturday night because I think that's the kind of – because they're far more evenly matched, I think, than people realize. I mean, it's – and I also thought Penn State's approach – They've been about 57-43 run to pass on first down. They were like 61-39 pass to run. I thought they're on first down. I think that approach really played out well for them because they moved the football.
Yeah, sure. I was, Steve, I'm just, you go back a lot longer than me, and I do think with a healthy Sean Clifford, they can play with people. Obviously, you saw it against Iowa, you know, when he throws the ball well. I'm just concerned. I've never seen this level of a disparity between the pass game and the run game. I was stunned that Illinois was able to beat Penn State with 357 rushing and 38 passing. I've never seen a team so one-dimensional, just completely one-dimensional, be able to beat Penn State. Penn State's usually able to win those games all the time. But I'm just really concerned that Penn State is so one-dimensional. I know everybody wonders how that is. Is it the offensive line? I don't think it's a running back. To me, it might be the system or the scheme. I mean, I don't know. But, you know, to have 33 yards rushing and you still had a chance to win the game on the road at Ohio State, that's mind-boggling.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting about the Illinois game. There's no question they controlled clock and they shortened the game. But they only got 10 points out of the approach, too.
Yeah, sure. Yep.
I mean, and two trips into the red zone. They got, you know, that's what's interesting about that game is like, everybody, the 357, I said, yeah, they got 10 points. Right? Now, if they got 30 points, I'd be like, oh, God, yeah. But 10 points, that's what really struck me.
Yeah.
Dotson's a marked man in every game. And yet he still had, 11 catches in the ball game. Washington, they both had over 100 yards receiving. What did you see in the Penn State pass game and the way it was executed?
I thought the middle of the field was open a good bit, and Sean did a really nice job using the middle of the field. Parker Washington did well. You know, then they were able to – obviously, Jahan is a special player. And when they're throwing – I mean, I go back to Iowa. Sean threw it 25 times before he got knocked out with 12 and a half minutes to go in the second quarter. 25 passes.
Yep.
And – that is just not typically Penn State football. That's, you know, that's what we've seen. But if that's what you have to do, you have to do what you have to do to win the game. And so, you know, we all talk about balance, but as James Franklin has talked about, you can have balance by using the short passing game as essentially your running game. And I'm not saying that they have to abandon the running game completely because you can't just have your quarterback back there throwing 70 times. But, Steve, have we gotten to the point where Sean has to throw 50 times if they're going to beat a quality opponent?
Well, I mean, it's enough to score 24, and then, you know, and then, of course, the big play of the game was the fumble recovery. But the deal with that was they were moving on that drive, too.
Yeah.
Defensively, five trips into the red zone for Ohio State, one touchdown.
Yeah.
What did you think of the Penn State defensive performance? I mean,
well, Sean, that return six, that gave him a touchdown. And then there was the other turnover that gave him a field goal. So yeah. Ohio State scored 23 points, basically, off Penn State's defense. You'll take that any day of the week. When you've got a team that can score 40 or 50 on just about anybody, and you essentially hold them to 23, you know, you'll take that all day. And I thought from a bounce-back effort, and you're right. Yeah, they gave up the 357 against Illinois, but only the 10 points. I thought the defense came back, and they've been great in the red zone all year. That, to me, is why Brent Pry is so, so valuable to the Penn State program. And every year when they start talking about the Broyles Award and things like that, I like to throw out Brent Pry's name as a candidate for the Broyles Award because – he is just so valuable to what that Penn State defense does. And look, they've got good players. Joey Porter had a tough night with the penalties, but they've got good players back there. Joey's an NFL player. Jaquan Brisker's an NFL player. AK is an NFL player. Brandon Smith. I mean, you've got good players on that side of the ball.
There's no question. In fact, this year Penn State has given up 20 scores. It's only – I think I want to say it's – I don't know, low 70s in terms of scoring, but 20 scores in the red zone. 12 of the 20 are field goals.
Yeah, it's only impressive. That's impressive.
That's only 8 touchdowns out of 20 scores you've given up. That's impressive. I want to ask you about the Steel Chambers play because you brought up Joey Porter, and Joey Porter was penalized on the sideline for a personal foul, not targeting, because I think it was Wilson caught it, and in college football, he was on the ground when he caught it.
Yeah.
So that means
right.
The play's over. So, yes, it's a penalty. Done. So now let's get to Steel Chambers. He also was called for a personal foul, but then was hit with targeting and subsequently was thrown out of the game. What did you think of, not the personal foul because Sean is down, but the targeting part of it? Because I'll preface it by saying Jack Ham and I just looked at each other and said, why are they throwing this kid out?
You did not. His helmet did hit him, though, Steve. Right? I mean,
yeah,
that is what
Yeah, it did. But I mean, you know, we kind of. I don't know. Maybe we're old school on this. But in other words, if he smacked the helmet, okay. But,
yeah.
Okay. You go from there.
I am going. Look, I am going to be in the minority on this. I already am. I've written about this. I've talked, and I understand that people are going to disagree with me, and I'm okay with that. If you hit a dude in the helmet, you should be ejected. That's my feeling. This thing about intent, did he intend? Well, if you don't intend to hurt somebody, they can still get paralyzed, okay? Football is vicious. And what they're trying to do after football, and I'm talking the NFL specifically, after they hid rule information about concussions for decades and people's lives were, you know, impacted tremendously, they're trying to clean it up. They're trying to make sure you don't hit dudes in the head. And so, again, everybody's going to disagree with me on this. I get it because it's a vicious, fast sport. I think that if you hit a guy in the head, you should be ejected. I just don't think you can – whether you intended to or not, Steve, I'm looking at football 30, 40, 50 years.
So are we. That's why the overtime rule – I think when I was talking about the overtime rule in the pregame – I said I felt like I was watching World Cup penalty kicks. I said, but I understand they're trying to preserve the sport. So I do get
that. Yeah. And that's the issue for me is what will football be like for the next generation? Because you've got to go in reverse. You can't just look at a play in a game. You've got to look at the number of kids that are no longer playing football. Moms and dads that are not letting their 12- and 13-year-old kid play football. Numbers are down drastically across this country for youth football participation.
Yeah.
Why is that? Because people are scared to death that their kid's going to go out there and get crushed, and it's going to hurt them for the rest of their lives. No, that's what football has to be concerned about, and again, I'll say it for the third time, everybody might disagree with me on this, but I think that football has to be taught that there needs to be a severe penalty. If you hit a guy in the head, and you can't judge intent. I mean, nobody ever really intends to just destroy somebody, although, you know, maybe sometimes. But if you do it, I think you have to have a severe penalty. So I really don't have an issue with the ejection, but I know most people are in college football do.
Well, I mean, the way we looked at those, if we see a guy square head-to-head, like square head-to-head, you know, or even like, you know, maybe, you know, enough of a helmet to helmet. Jack and I will say right away, because we feel the same way, I can speak for him, you should be out. But if it's one of those where they're like, boy, it's close, you know, it's that's where we get a little bit of an issue. We're watching the replay and we're like, okay, you know, you grazed them or whatever. That's where we, in other words, we think it's a personal foul. There's your 15, but not thrown at. That's the line we draw.
And I think the rule is probably going to be there's so many people who are outraged by all these kids getting ejected that, you know, Joel Klatt mentioned it in a Wisconsin game. I think the rule is going to be adjusted, and what you and Jack are talking about will probably ultimately end up happening, at least, you know, for the short term. I think we're going to be visiting this all the time. I mean, all the time. Every 2, 3, 4 years, we're going to be visiting the impact of this. And as James liked to say, they really need to study this and see the impact. And that takes time to do. So I think what you're discussing is probably going to be the way it's going to go. And I would say even after the season, in the off season, they'll adjust it. But again, I don't really have an issue with it, because I think the number one thing, far and away, more so than a kid being able to get to play in the game, and you know, you got to protect everybody.
Right. No, I understand. See, to me, all those things should go to the league office the next day. Every single one that was a targeting penalty. And they should be able to determine the next day whether the player is out for the next game or not.
Okay, yeah.
Hey, in other words, we have all this technology. So say they were a total, let's just say there were 7 Big Ten games over the weekend, which I think there were. Now, maybe somebody had buys. It doesn't matter. Just say they played a full schedule. Say in those 7 games there were 4 targetings. What, you don't have the time on a Sunday morning to look at them to see if the player should be out the next game?
So you're saying let them stay in the game on Saturday and then suspend them for the entire next game?
No, I would say that under the current rule, the guy's out of the game, but if it's in the second half, you're out of the first half of the next game.
Right,
well, to
right.
me, you should be able to look at that and say, hey, look, you know, we looked at it. We think he should be out the first half of the next game because we thought it was egregious. Or we looked at it and you know what? Throwing him out and the penalty was enough, he should be able to play the full game the next game.
I think that's reasonable. And then we also have to consider television angles and television games.
Yep.
Penn State's games are all going to have these tremendous replays available. What about Nevada versus San Diego State? Are they going to have as much TV? I mean,
Or cameras.
Yeah, exactly. It's always going to be difficult, you know, depending on the level of the game.
Here's the next one. Again, we'll start with my opinion, and then I'll let you think. I thought one of the biggest mistakes that the Big Ten made in its previous TV contract, and I made the statement before they signed it, I said, no 6-day windows. You should be able to tell 12 days ahead of time which games you want. Penn State, Michigan is now a 6-day window again. They make this seem like it's complicated.
You only hurt fans doing that.
Exactly.
Let fans have an idea. People got to travel. Again, especially these massive fan bases like we're talking about here, and you're planning your whole weekend over it. That's the business. I tell people all the time, Steve, college football is a professional sport. It is. It's a professional business. These are college kids, but everything about it, these decisions are made for money. I don't think that's going to change, because they're always going to maximize the dollars and the profit whenever they can.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I know they pay a lot of money in rights. I got it. But you know what? What's the biggest reason you think TV ratings are up this fall?
have not thought about that. I think, I mean, we've all just been through so much over the last couple of years that maybe we're kind of getting back to sports being that escape that we truly want. I mean, it's the first thing off the top of my head.
TV ratings, in my opinion, are up in part. Now, you're talking about a little percentage here, but the atmosphere is coming through the TV set, and I think it's a draw.
Yeah, I've heard you say that before. You can sit in your living room with your mask. Hey, look.
And I think that they've got to have more respect for the fan being in the stands. That's why you don't need a 6-day window. That's my point, to draw it full circle.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point.
Yeah. All right. Hey, it was a pleasure having you on. You know, congratulations on getting to DK Sports in Pittsburgh. I think that's, you know, they do great work, and they're fortunate to have you.
Steve, thank you so much. You guys enjoy your day. Appreciate it.